K-Mud Podcast presents.
K-Mud Community Radio's The Cannabis Show with your host Steve Dodge and Sunshine Sarah Seda. And real soon, we're going to have Nat Pennington from Humboldt Seed Company coming on. We open up to callers at the bottom of the hour, and we're going to want to hear from you, especially if you have any seed stories. And this naturally will blend into genetics. And if I can, I'm going to try to talk Sunshine into talking about how she gets her genetics, which are real cool. So I started my own grow, my own 10,000, and I got my seeds, which I picked up from Humboldt Seed Company, and I planted them 4 days ago. My orange cream pop all came up at day three, and the rest of them, Hella Jelly and Granny Candy and something else, are coming up today. Very vigorous. I'm very excited. I guess everybody does that, but I lifted up one of the trays and there's roots coming out and I'm going, oh my God.
That's awesome. That's amazing.
Yeah, I'm amazed. And it's fun, you know, it's that time of season.
Right, right. Such a good germination rate.
Yeah, yeah. And I want to point out that Humboldt Seed Company had a lot to do with that.
And he's our guest today.
He'll be in a little later as well. But that gives us an opportunity to talk about Measure S, which I believe the guillotine falls tomorrow.
Oh, yeah.
Right?
There's going to be at the Board of Supervisors meeting. Anyone out there who is encouraged to join in on that meeting if they want to have their say about what is happening. It's just interesting numbers out of there's like, I don't know, something like 1,800 permits and about 600 of those owe taxes. The numbers are quite big for what's owed. I don't know. I'm a little confused about how all that breaks down.
You mean the actual amount owed is large?
Yeah, it's pretty large.
What is it? How large?
Dang it. Okay, listen up, listeners. Lauren is going to be giving us for tonight's news. She's going to give us the breakdown of a lot of this. So do tune to the K-Mud local news tonight to get the lowdown.
To get the details, not just the gossip.
Yeah, because I don't have that exact number, but it's well into the millions.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
Well,
I know.
I went ahead and paid up mine. You know, the threat of losing my license was enough for me, and I'm kind of embarrassed about it. But all the same, it was enough for me to pay. I didn't have the money. I had to pull it out to get it done. And now I totally understand the people who have paid. And they go, what about these people who didn't pay? They can't get away with that. Or you better refund me or something, right?
Right. But then, I kind of feel like the county really wants to just wash out some of the players that they feel maybe we're not that committed to actually having a long-term business plan for themselves. And so I think there's some of that. So I feel like even people like myself who I don't owe the county any money on back taxes, but I am someone who would like to transfer a permit. But when it has so much of these back taxes attached to it, it's kind of like, I don't really know, you know, you're like,
right.
And so here I am caught in the middle of something.
Well, then let me ask you, because I kind of touched on it before the show started with the, what was I going to say? With the Measure S, and what about people who aren't shady, if you want to use that word, but just don't have the money? Somehow it seems like it's not appropriate to be penalizing them if they simply don't have the money.
No, that's not the way how it works.
Tell me how it works.
Well, I mean, you know, once you say once you agree to pay those taxes, you agree to pay those taxes. There's no the county did.
Oh, so I don't remember. Did I sign a piece of paper saying I agreed to pay?
That's a good question. Probably.
Okay.
Probably. But yeah, it's a little confusing.
It is a little confusing. Least.
But it doesn't look, it looks like the county will just lose the money because they're not, you can't necessarily attach those taxes to the person or to the business. And so once that permit is no longer, like once it's revoked, then that money's, you know, it just goes with the permit.
So let's see now. This is potentially, if every one of the 600 simply can't make it happen, they had a lot of time, then that's almost a third of the growers in the county. Doesn't that seem like a huge, I use the word huge, tax loss for the county?
Yeah. Yeah, it sure is.
So then it falls into the category of shooting yourself in your own foot. Kinda.
Yeah.
Let's see. This was an initiative, right, that was voted on the population in Humboldt?
Mm-hmm.
So the voters approved it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Anyway, we're going to, you know, stay tuned to the Cayman Local News.
Yeah, you'll get more information there.
Go with this. Yeah, understand this a little bit better because I don't know how these numbers are adding up as well. And anyway, and then also, you know, like also there's money owed to the planning department too. And so I don't really know what the strategy is to even like get that money back, if at all.
I wonder, you know, and I'll tell you this, the way they handle their billing could use a lot of improvement because...
Well, it's very discouraging to even want to get a permit at all.
No, it is. I mean, you get a, you know, after you're paying for your permit, then you get this, I'm going to call it hidden, but I guess it isn't. But then you get this next charge from the county. It took some guy...
It was like $1,000 for what, some inspection that never happened and they never even drove anywhere, but somehow something, got logged for it somehow?
Some of it looks like it's completely legitimate, but you took your damn sweet time letting me know, right?
Right.
And it's just, like you said, you owe what you owe. All right. How can you get around that?
Well, the taxes, yeah. But some of this other billing from the planning department is a bit difficult. It doesn't always make sense. So
no, it definitely doesn't. It definitely doesn't. We're still waiting for Nat. Let's talk a little bit, kind of a pre-talk about seeds. I mentioned that I managed to get myself a real vigorous strain and I'm very happy.
Yeah, you love that one. You said it's like your favorite one.
Oh, do we have? Nate. Let's get him on. Hi, you're on.
Hey, guys. How you doing?
We're doing good. Real good to hear.
Yeah, we're doing good.
Real good to hear you. Glad you could make it to the show.
I was listening on my drive from the office.
Right, thank you.
Measure S thing is kind of it's not very nice.
I know. And I was going to say, you know, like, yes, we probably signed something saying we'd pay. But I also remember the state had a thing saying that they were going to keep it 1 acre cap for the first 5 years.
Right.
I could have swore it was on the vote thing that, I mean, I didn't vote yes anyway, but.
Yeah, well, it was part of the, I
agree with you, Sunshine. Yeah, that's not how it works. We do have to pay, but it's just funny how they can change the rules, you know?
Yeah.
Anytime they want to.
I know.
Move the goalposts around.
I have a different.
Hard to laugh, though.
I'm hoping someday we can find out what happened with that acre cap because, honestly, I think it just got lost. I think it was actually with the state, not on Prop 64. And then when they merged the two, the MRSA and Prop 64, in all that chaos, that got lost is what I believe happened. So,
I also heard rumors of big lobbyists.
I heard too, and it makes sense.
I mean, you know, like I've said before, with all the greed we've seen in this industry, I mean, you've been doing this for a long time. We've been doing this all for a long time. With all the greed we've been seeing over all these years, how could you ever think that cap had any chance? No way. No way. Everyone's after the money, just like Measure X. Measure S. I mean, it's like, come on now. For real.
It's all about the money, which is kind of like bleak. If you think about it.
Everyone. You know. Everyone got so excited about the money. That's when I knew that acre cap was never going to last. Everyone was just way too excited about it.
I was excited about it. Well, there you go.
Yeah, I was excited. Weren't we all excited?
Well, you know, Nate, you're honestly pretty well known in the county for making really quality seeds. I was just praising your orange cream pop and your hella jelly, which I planted 4 days ago. The orange cream pop is at 3 days was out of the ground, and almost all of it right now. And then the rest of the stuff, the granny candy and the hella jelly, they're popping out right now. Very vigorous roots on the bottom, the whole nine yards. So I appreciate your hard work up there.
You picked the right timing because from what I heard while I was over in. At the Spanibus event, I didn't miss much good weather, but just the last couple, you know, last 4 or 5 days been nice, huh?
Yeah, they've been pretty nice.
Oh, do tell us about Spanibus, well, since you mentioned it.
Yeah. It's a nice... I texted Johnny to Sally from Huckleberry Hills. It was nice having them along.
Yeah, and this takes place in Barcelona, Spain, for the listeners out there.
Yeah, and it's, like, refreshing for a lot of us, like, torn and tattered, you know, industry folks that have seen, how things have shifted and whatnot and all that good stuff and commercialized capitalism and da-da-da-da-da-da. They're doing something... Right, and it's ironic because, you know, at the same time, I think that there are people that wish that they could be in big fields of cannabis like we get to be in over here and, you know, enjoy not like loose regulations, but there are certain aspects of like what we get to do in California, for example, or in certain areas of the U.S. that you just can't do anywhere else in the world. And I think part of that is like big outdoor sun-grown, beautiful plantations. And, so to them, that's this like, you know, cannabis, wonderland of sorts that we live in. And ironically though, you know, after having seen sort of how, you know, essentially like overproducing or whatever you want to call it, whatever's sort of gone sideways about, I mean, I think particularly for those of us in the Emerald Triangle who, you know, sort of know where we were and where we are and the differences, like you see this space that they have where it's kind of like almost like it was in the 215 days where it's somewhat regulated. I don't want to say it's overregulated, but it's just different. Like you can do small grows, like you can even do outdoor grows, but they're small, and you can do small businesses and small social clubs similar to like how things evolved in Amsterdam, and that creates this like lots of small business creates a wonderful community and economy around the community, and it's, you know, the plant, it's not like it's hard to get cannabis over there. I think that
Actually,
if you're interested, you can go into a social club and sign up and get cannabis, and it's not unbelievably expensive or anything.
And did you?
Maybe not as cheap as it is here, but.
I'm just kind of curious, too. I mean, if California cannabis is making it into the social clubs in Spain, and if you by chance overheard anything about, like, the price per pound of California weed in Spain right now.
You know, I'm not sure that I'm the best person to ask because we're so head in the sand on the seed side of things. But I would think that it is. I mean, yeah, and it is. There was definitely.
I wouldn't be surprised if, you know, if it's more there than it is like here in the Emerald Triangle, of course. Like.
Well, maybe you can't
definitely cost
this,
more. Yeah.
This question, but what are farmers, producers in a better way there? I mean, right now bulk pot's going for like $200 a pound. Is it better in Europe? Can you say?
Yeah, definitely. It seemed like, you know, first to answer Sunshine's question, it was like you never know, Sunshine, because a lot of people want a brand as California cannabis anyway. So, you know, you might wonder. I mean, it's just like when there was the whole bodega scene that was really huge in New York, and every single package in there was like, you know, had the little California sticker on it, and it said, you know, cookies, but you had no idea if it was had anything to do with cookies, and you're pretty darn sure it didn't come from California's metric system, you know, even though it had the same little sticker, and you know, so a lot of counterfeit, you could say, I guess, But that wasn't, like, the feeling that you got from those social clubs there. But that being said, like, they were genuinely wanting to give you exactly what they were told, you know, that it was when they purchased the product. But, like, they seemed genuine and authentic with their sales tactics. But still, you know, who's to say that but it did look like it. I mean, it looked like it genuinely could have been coming from California. And I mean, I would assume that it does. I have heard that people have figured out ways to do things like that. And yes, to answer your question, Steve, they are, I think, treating their farmers better there, just because it's not being like taxed essentially like an extortion sort of way. And I mean, it's nobody's fault. Like, all this stuff, like, everybody kind of thought, you know, a lot about the industry that hasn't panned out, right? Like, I don't know, we all thought that, you know, people would immediately be, you know, understand that craft cannabis was and really good, well grown, well treated, well cured product would fetch a higher dollar. But, you know, people immediately surprised us by being like, we want super low quality with the high lab test number. And that's what we want.
And that, you know, was, I think, kind of disastrous for the overall
industry. Whose fault is it? You know, well, is it education? Is it our fault for not educating? Is it just because there's a lot of dumb people? I don't know. You know, like, whose fault? Who knows? But it is what it is, as they say. And in over there, though, it's I think it's nice because they're, you know, you don't get a lot of the commercialization stuff that goes along with it when it's not like 100%. When it's like there are advantages to gray areas in some respects, and part of them, I think, are the fact that people maybe are just like less driven to the point of, you know, feeling like they need to create fake news, you know, fake advertisement type stuff, you know, fake lab reports. Fake.
I mean, the farmers, the farmers in Spain might have a different opinion if they're seeing their prices go down due to California weed showing up in their market at a lower price.
Well, they certainly would have a different opinion about, yeah, about the California weed. They would probably not be appreciative of having it come in cheap.
We do have a caller.
Yeah, we got a caller. Let's get him in.
Let's take him in. Hey, welcome to the show.
Oh, appreciate it.
Yeah, I
two things. As he was talking about California weed out in Spain, I wonder how those, you know, Trump is trying to do tariffs against almost everyone in Europe now. And so, yeah, there may be some issues regarding tariffs. Although some of the countries are doing, they're giving certain states breaks on the tariffs. So they're encouraging trade with California if you're not part of Trump.
I heard that
could be an issue. But I wanted to actually talk about the old hemp, you know, the work weed, the stuff that won't get you high. I'm just wondering, I called a couple of weeks ago and was talking about, you know, the old workweed hemp economy, and it used to be massive before 1927. You know, it was like cattle silage, and there was there were oils and papers and all, you know, all kinds of different products.
Ship rigging.
Now, so down in L.A., you know, they had their fires, and there's a big fear that, you know, the muddy hillsides are going to cause landslides. Well, hemp is great for preventing erosion. And so I'm wondering if there's any, you know, maybe you've got some somebody down there in the L.A. area that might want to do some sort of a project to show how effective cannabis is, or hemp, more like, would be in preventing erosion.
Interesting idea.
Well, it certainly makes sense, and I think not enough of that is done. Nat, what do you think?
Sure. I mean, I don't know, might also look to get native bunch grasses and stuff that was historically along the hillside too. But, you know, if it's a disaster area, then sometimes you know, even like a non-native plant, you'd want to go and just stabilize the area. And I certainly would say that hemp is a generator of biomass, and it also does, supposedly I've heard it's a good bioaccumulator too, so you can get some of the toxins that might be leaching into the soil and maybe turn them into less bioactive type chemicals and so
we got a good thought. We got to go over to Doro here at the mothership, and she's got something to say.
Yeah, there was a caller who didn't want to go on the air, but she had a question for you, which would be like, what about the true humble seeds, the ones that haven't been feminized? Does that still exist? So she's talking about the ones that she found here when she arrived in 69-70, and if they still exist, how much are they?
Okay.
Okay, we'll get to that in just a moment. Caller, you still with us?
No, I guess not.
Caller?
No.
Okay.
I think. So, Nat, what do you think about that? First of all, non-feminized seeds as what are the advantages, disadvantages, but also about seeds back in the 70s.
Yeah, I mean, who was smoking? Maybe some other callers who were here in the late 60s, early 70s, and were smoking weed from here could tell us a little bit more about that, because I'd be curious. I really can't answer that question.
Yeah, I was born in 1977. So.
Yeah.
But I'll tell you, I did a ton of trash talking about feminized seeds, and I did it between really when I very first started breeding in the late 90s, all the way up until I started making feminized seeds. And And I'll just straight up admit that I had a bad opinion of it, and I thought that it was likely going to cause some harm to the species, and I didn't trust it, and I had tried some, and they had some problems, and here's the short and dirty story about it. Basically, you know, the initial way that people learned about that you can make seeds, cannabis seeds, all female, was that there was a hermaphrodite plant, right? And it usually, and for those of us that have done some indoor farming, you know, when you leave the plants flowering a little bit long inside the room for, you know, trying to bulk it up or whatever is going on, they'll sometimes put out a little banana, as we call it. And what that is an anther. And it's, you know, a male organ forming on an otherwise female plant. And so generally males are in all animals and plants and everything have XX chromosomes, and females have, or excuse me, vice versa. Males have XY chromosomes, females have XX. But that extra genetic material that's on the second leg of the second X or whatever, that makes it not a Y, right? That is the reproductive organs, you know, so that's like the ovaries or whatever, ovules and things that females have that us guys don't. But down deep, we can all default as males, but we can't really necessarily create, you know, as men, we can't grow ovaries because we just don't have the genetic material to do it. So the way that feminized seeds are made is that you essentially cut the utility or the efficacy of the little other X leg for making an X at Y for all intents and purposes. So it forms default sex organs as a male. And when you have one that does that just on its own, then that's a hermaphrodite, right?
Right.
And it forms a banana, let's just say. There's all different forms of hermaphrodites. So you can have hermaphrodites that happen right after flowering. Usually that's kind of like a stress-induced. Maybe we flip the lights from 20 down to 12 in a single night. That's unusual. Plants don't see that in nature. So then it was like, well, I'm going to throw some male parts with the female parts. So that's just the way that the plant can kind of like hedge its bets towards reproduction. And cannabis is naturally dioecious, meaning that male and female are on separate plants or organisms, and which is unique. Cannabis is only one of 6% of the plant kingdom that's like that. Like 94% of plants are monoecious, meaning that they have boy parts and girl parts on the same plant. Like corn, for example, has the tassels, which are the male part, and then the silk leads to the ovules, which are the corn kernels, and that's the female. So that's on the same plant, meaning that it, more often than not, can have sex with itself, which leads to cannabis's like diversity and all the wondrous things. And it's also a little bit more evolutionarily progressive, let's just say, than other plants. Like it can evolve faster, it has evolved faster, it's maybe even, let's say, a more evolved plant, which, you know, I think some of us lovers of cannabis would be like, yeah, right, exactly, it's evolved, yeah. And so, you know, in nature, you know, it takes a male and a girl. That's the way Jah intended it, and that's the way it should always be. Maybe so. But when I started doing some science related to salmon restoration and did a grant project down in UC Davis where we found the difference between spring and the fall run salmon on the Klamath, which helped get them onto the endangered species list and all this stuff, just, you know, really with some very great scientists who, you know, most certainly were not of the mind to, like, they loved cannabis, by the way. They were, you know, of course. I was in the room with all these incredibly brilliant geneticist geniuses, and after the meeting, like, they're like, hey, you know, you smoke? I'm like, yes, I do, of course. The next thing I knew, we were, like, best friends forever. So those types of people were the ones that really kind of encouraged me to do the feminizing and to not be afraid and not, because there are so many advantages, you know, the obvious being, well, it's, you only have to deal with the female portion of the cannabis plant, which, you know, is the portion that we enjoy most.
Correct.
I would say. And then, yeah, the other reason just being that, like, you know, just the quick analogy that I do is that I have, like, a couple of really pretty daughters, and it's a curse, not a blessing, trust me. But, you know, you wouldn't tell from looking at me that I make pretty daughters, but apparently I do. And that's the thing, is you can't look at a male very easily and see what you're going to get from breeding with that if you're just really after the female form of the plant. And so you might get to know your male plant. And Sunshine, I kind of expect that you're, you know, going to have something to say, and I love it too, and I know that you're right, because you're a great breeder as well. But, like, you know, you got to get to know your male plant. You got to know how, you know, he's going to react in certain situations. I mean, there really may be some things that you, from male to true male to female breeding, that have advantages. But at the base core of it, and let's discuss this, Sunshine, but at the base core of it, you know, if you're looking for a very pretty flower that smells a certain way, and then it is more difficult to know for sure that, if you're looking at the male version of that it's going to translate into a female if you're looking at the female.
I need to jump in here. And...
Oh, yeah.
KMUD is a community radio station in the Redwood region of Northern California. Donate to support people-powered radio at kmud.org.
Want to remind people they've got KMUG Community Radio's The Cannabis Show, and we're real pleased to be talking with Nate from Humboldt Seed Company, and we're going to open up to callers. We've already had a few, and you can get us here at 707-923-3911.
Do we have a call? We do. I'm just going to comment real quick on the feminized seeds, and that is that I think, too, you need to stabilize. If you stabilize, if you can back cross, like, three times before you go to feminize, I think that can help. And also, the question that I have, and I'm not really well experienced with these, is that if your feminized seeds are not as good as the original parent, that, to me, is like, yeah, I don't know if I really want to go that way to begin with. So I don't know what your experience has been, but I would say that if you just make, like, one cross and then you go to feminize, you're going to have so much more variation that it's going to be more difficult. I think you do need to at least back cross three times. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, and I mean, that's I think, one of the biggest things that you see with, like, the sort of scene of cannabis breeding is the tendency is to just take the latest clone, which, you know, like, I like to just use dogs, and, like, we've all had that mutt that was, like, our favorite dog. I mean, my favorite dog of all time was a mutt that I got from, you know, a friend, and it was just, I'm not even totally positive what the breed was, and so, but it was great, and if I could take that dog and just clone it, I probably would still have that same dog to this day. But, you know, the unfortunate thing about breeding like that is that you can't really repeat it very well or easily. And so you might have a litter of puppies with another mutt that looked similar, but they're in like their background genetically is going to express 100% in the puppies. And so, you know, if even if it looked similar and was a similar type mutt, you just don't have any clue what's going to happen. And the basis of science is repeatability of experiments. And so,
well, I want to talk about that when we get done with our callers. We have two callers lined up. Let's get the first one in, please.
Okay, so the first one didn't want to go on the air, but he was telling me about seeds that he had brought from Colombia and Panama from an island called Pearl Island. He called them jungle weed. And the thing is that they bloom end of November.
Wow.
Okay, that's a really long time.
Yeah, and then we have a caller.
All right.
Okay,
thank you.
Let's get the caller in, please.
I'd like to try to count on my weed, but
hi.
Yeah. Welcome to the show.
Yeah, I had a couple comments.
Sure.
I wanted to say, you know, cannabis, though it, you know, will go hermaphrodite given stress or other treatment, you might say natural life cycle is, you know, having the male and female on different plants. And, you know, like I said, it's not 100% true, but I tend to want to honor the plant by sticking with, you know, the natural way of that it, you know, reproduces. And so I just want to put that plug out there. I mean, in an age where we're racing to, you know, manipulate our own genetics and become transhuman or whatever some people call it, I think nature's been chugging along naturally and doing pretty good. Anyways, so my plug is don't give up on the kind of traditional method of breeding, which would be like you said, even though you can select your male with a lot of other traits, you can't necessarily know the flower until you make crosses with it, right? And you hold on to that male, and you make your crosses, and you can see what kind of offspring it breeds. And so you can select excellent males that way. I understand in a marketplace where the demand is primarily for feminized seeds because, number one, you're paying big bucks for the seeds sometimes, and number two, you're capped and limited on the numbers. So anyways, I understand that aspect of it and that's what the market actually is mostly supports. But as kind of a person who loves to try to follow the nature way, you know, like I said, I would don't give up and keep a place for the natural process or of breeding. Number two, just I think a funny observation I've made has been, like, if you look at the chromosomes, the X and the Y, you know, you have a pair, at least with humans, you have a pair of chromosomes, X and Y makes a boy, X and an X makes a girl. And I look at the Y and say, it's broken. You know, it's a broken X. It's missing a leg. So kudos to the women out there, or the females. They're not broken. Anyways, that's just kind of a joke. But,
well, it's
One question I did have, and I'd like your guest to comment on it, is have you noticed, like, if you have a male and a female you're crossing, and I know, you know, just from a simple statistics standpoint, you would think the distribution might be somewhat even over the offspring, which are male and female, in terms of what characteristics they pick up. But if you, I wondered if you just, in your experience of doing it, have ever seen, like, oh, some of the males maybe slightly more often perhaps take after the male parent versus the female. And I know that's probably not true, but I just wanted you to comment on that. And thanks
that's
for
a great. I mean, it's a great question, and I don't know whether I've ever looked closely enough into that. And so basically you're saying, is it possible that males will inherit more from their fathers versus their mothers and vice versa? And, I mean, I think all these things that you bring up are super interesting. And I mean, I would echo what you're saying is like, you know, there is absolutely nothing wrong with doing regular breeding. There's also, I would definitely argue that there's not necessarily anything wrong with doing feminized breeding, because I thought that there probably would be, and then I really tried, and the jury's still out, of course. I mean, we could be fucking things up. Excuse me, damn it, I'm not supposed to curse, but yeah. We could be messing things up. And so, God, I mean, yeah, I think that you bring up some really great stuff. And the one thing that, where I would say that, like, you know, the other reason that I started a seed company was because I saw how much of a pain cloning was and how energy intensive it is sometimes,
right. Yeah, yeah.
Depending on how you do it. You know, you can have solar grow lights these days and do pretty well, but, you know, seed is a much more, I think, environmentally sound way to grow and much more natural. And so if we're going to have a commercial space, then, you know, where my mind went was also like, well, let's figure out how we can have this come from seed, because it's just such a more, you know, natural way. And even though the feminizing isn't natural, there, it does allow for more like that. When I first came on this show, I think, to talk about autoflowering, I was like, well, geez, you know, part of it for me is like, let's get rid of all the goddamn depth harps that are littering the landscape in Humboldt, and,
right,
you know, figure out how we can do this stuff not only more efficiently for the planet, but just also so that we can be more sustainable as an economy here too.
Because, yeah,
you know, if weed's going to be $200 a pound, frick, I can hardly afford any panda plastic to make it. Jeez, you know.
Well, yeah. You know, the old adage, you get what you pay for. Eventually, farmers are simply not going to be able to make cuts. And this is my opinion, of course, make cuts, yeah, and still create quality. The lucky,
right,
ones,
'cause you'll
will
be pinching every penny,
every
and
penny,
hoping to have quality. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, it could be. I mean, some people are pulling it off. And
yeah.
But it takes a pretty significant commitment, you know, because it, you know, you're not buying your clones, you're making your clones, you know, you're not buying your seeds, you're crafting your own seeds, you know, you're kind of completely immersed in the cannabis.
And I mean, what the caller said a minute ago was, I think, still true. Like, you can make your own seeds, and it is easiest to make them regular. Although even doing that is no small job. If you want to have seedless weed, you have to isolate and make sure that you don't accidentally pollinate your whole crop. And the whole hermaphrodite thing is a whole other topic that we could get into, I'm sure. But you guys wanted me to talk a little bit more about Spain, I'm sure, right?
I want to hear what you got to say.
Also, as we're getting towards the top of the hour,
we got about 5 minutes left.
Is there any, like, new releases from Humboldt Seed Company that you want to talk about or promote while you're on the show today?
I'm really excited about the chicken and waffles one, because
chicken,
it's all local. It's and I think it's, you know, where I hate to say it, but I no longer can just be like, "Ooh, I like blueberry muffin because it's so fun and to smoke and it's all day and it makes me goofy and happy." And then at night when I'm watching a movie, I like to get ripped.
Chicken waffles coming out
super strong. Yeah, but this day and age, you just got to grow what the darn, you know, what we discussed earlier, which is still high test. Seems to be an important thing. And I was hoping that having real, like, labs and now all I see, and it's like they just can't figure out how to regulate nicely. I mean, I talked to my friend, and I'm not even going to tell what lab it is, but I talked to a lab owner, and they were being audited. Their test samples were being audited. So the state is going in and doing diligence on these, some of these bizarre test result numbers that labs were giving out. So, like, you, I don't know if anybody heard, but, you know, it got all the way near 50%, which is, like, just absolutely ludicrous. It's like physics, the most basic laws of physics.
Nat, we're really approaching in the top of the hour.
Oh, okay. I'll shut up.
No.
But everybody knows there's a bunch of fake
stuff
out there.
You're quite the guest guy. Don't think otherwise. We got a lineup.
We're stacked with calls.
Okay, so please make your question or comment to the point. Thank you.
Okay, we have two callers waiting, but we also have the lady who called at the beginning about the seeds, non-feminized, from the 60s, 70s.
Okay.
And she wanted to clarify your message. I don't know that I'll be able to say it as good as she would have said, but she was afraid to go on the air. But she wanted to convey the idea that what a beautiful thing it would be if those kind of seeds would still exist, a strain that has never been modified, feminized, crossed, or anything that would be pure, that stayed pure over the 50 last year, and that would be true humbled.
Okay.
That was the message. Now we have two callers.
Okay.
All right.
I would like that. I would like that, too.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, okay. get the first caller on. Hi, you're on the air.
Hello?
Yeah,
hi.
You're on the air. You got a quick comment here to make?
Yeah, I sure do. You guys were, she was just updating you about the original 60s and 70s seeds. I'm surprised you guys don't already know this info, but when the first, you know, like Back to the Landers first came up here and started sort of buying and building their own existence up here. They were growing their own stash, and that was coming mostly from bags of Colombian and Mexican and whatnot. But then a couple of folks had outpassed up in Steely Creek, or up the hill from there. There was a place called the Land Trust.
Yeah, I remember.
That's right.
The couple of them were the first ones to, they decided that they were going to go to Afghanistan, Pakistan, India, South Africa, Spain, and they keistered and take some seeds to themselves, brought them back here, and that was the beginning of what all these crosses are now. That is kind of the legacy of where Humboldt got the reputation of producing the best.
That was also crossing land races, which, wow, crossing land races. So that would be so cool. But anyway, thanks for your call.
Okay. That isn't
awesome.
Exactly it. Kind of wanted to just put in, weigh in the thought that from that period, it used to be was like, back then, it was kind of trial and error. There wasn't a whole lot of thinking about the science of any of it. It was pretty much, you know, pick the biggest, strongest male and put them next to the females that have, you know, or the best hips to waist, and you did it that way and sort of began to make a your choices from there.
Hey,
I'd love to talk with your guy, but we got one more caller. They've been waiting. So we're going to get
them
in.
Okay,
thank you for your
He's
call.
He's absolutely
really.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah, thank you very much.
Oh, wait, do you want to make a quick comment, Nat, on that?
I said he's right. He's very right.
Okay, well, terrific. You call us again, hey?
Yeah, I should call back again.
Yeah, please. Let's get our next caller in.
Hello. Welcome to the show.
Am I in?
Yeah.
Hi.
Welcome to the show.
Hey, this is Craig from Alpenglow Farms, and I just wanted to throw out a quick PSA to all the cultivators out there in Humboldt County that might owe Measure S taxes or are involved with a payment plan with the county. Tomorrow, there is a time certain, 1:30 p.m., to be at the Board of Supervisors meeting if you want to weigh in on your immediate situation. Our farm does not owe taxes, but we are going to be there just to observe and see how it goes tomorrow. But
okay, great.
Tomorrow, 1:30 at the supervisor's chambers at 1:30, and, you know, share your piece, and
sure,
maybe you
man.
Can make a case to figure things out.
Right on, man.
I'm
going
to try
thank
to go,
you.
Too, Craig. I'll
thanks
try to go.
Very much.
Yeah, yeah, thanks for
okay.
that call.
So,
thank you, Craig. You're the man.
We really are at the top of the hour, and you have been listening to, you're still there.
He's here.
Yeah.
We got totally confused up with calls. Please, we've got a minute, but give us some closing remarks.
Well, it's interesting over in Spain. It's a lot like it was here pre-legalization. Sunshine and Steve, you guys do amazing work on the call. On the show, I know that Steve's always looking for guests, so all these people that call in should come and offer to tell these great stories. And,
I would so love that. I really
yeah.
would.
Oh, and where can people find your menu for Humble Seed Company?
We're back. We're at most of the dispensaries in town, but they just call me. Call us at our office. You know, like we have, especially if you're licensed, we can go straight to you.
Well, is your menu posted online?
Yeah, our website, humbleseedcompany.com.
Okay, great. Excellent.
Okay, terrific.
Excellent. Thank you so much.
Yeah, this has been a great show. Really appreciate you making it. We're going to get you on
should
again
do it more
for
often.
Sure.
For sure.
Yeah, we should do it more often.
For sure. Thank you.
Okay, so you have been listening to KMUG Community Radio's The Cannabis Show with your hosts, Steve Dodge and Sunshine Sarasota. And we've been very pleased to have Nat Pennington from Humboldt Seed Company on as our guest. If you've been listening in, boy, it was an exciting and active show. Next week, we will be interviewing Scott Harris, who is another extractor in the area. So tune in, listen in, call in. Good night. Good
right,
night,
thank, Matt. Thanks, everyone. Thanks, callers. Thanks, Dorio.
Thanks, you guys.
Yep. Good night.
Bye.
This has been a KMUG podcast. To listen to other shows and more episodes of this show, find us on all the platforms where you get your podcast and also on our website, kmud.org.